Hello, wine enthusiasts and wine newbies wanting to learn more about what's going on in the wine world. On today's podcast, winemaker Eric Miller and his partner, wine grape grower Randy Peters of Kokomo Winery, discuss their 2016 Gopher Hills Block Pinot Noir from Peters Vineyard in the Sonoma Coast region, which scored a perfect 100 points in the North Coast Wine Challenge. Buckle up, it's time to head out on the wine road. Now, full transparency here. My wife and I have been wine club members at Kokomo for a number of years now, but that has nothing to do with today's interview, because by achieving the first ever 100-point score during the North Coast Wine Challenge for their 2016 Gopher Hills Block Pinot Noir, that deserves some attention. What is notable about this competition is it includes six different, highly respected Northern California wine regions, which are Napa, Sonoma, Lake, Mendocino, and Marin counties, and parts of Solano County. That is major league competition. As you'll hear later, it was referred to as, quote, as close to perfection as it could be, end quote. Now, if that doesn't demand podcast coverage, I don't know what does. I was able to sit down with both the winemaker, Eric Miller, and grower, Randy Peters, to get their perspective on why this wine was so good and to touch upon their cellar and vineyard management. I started off, of course, by congratulating them on a phenomenal showing.
Thank you very much, Jeff. We're very excited and thrilled to be the first 100-point wine in the competition.
And I really feel that here at Kokomo, we finally figured out what we're doing, maybe.
It's fitting that you're both here because your winning 2016 Gopher Hill Pinot is wine made by Eric from Randy's Grapes. And aside from this grand accolade, what a smart business decision it was to bring on Randy as a partner.
Oh, yeah. When I first was nudging him and trying to get him to come on as a partner for Kokomo, you got to think about it, man. I already named the winery after my hometown, this little town in Indiana. And here you have fourth generation farmer Randy Peters, who's, you know, born and raised in Dry Creek Valley in California, boy from the start, and he partners up with the guy from Kokomo, Indiana, that names his winery Kokomo. But I think it's one of the best decisions that I've ever made, and thankfully he came on board to do this, and now it's just really made our winery so dynamic in the fact that we make Alexander Valley Cab and Sonoma Coast Pinot and Chard, and then of course from Dry Creek our beloved Zinfandel, and then Sauvignon Blanc and Grenache and that. So it's just gives us a wide variety of grapes that we're able to work with there. But, you know, having that passion in the vineyard, having that team that Randy has and he's assembled in the vineyard, and being able to make sure that that quality comes through, as Randy calls it, vertical integration, where we can really, take pride in not only what they're growing, but then see it come to its final product. And we definitely kind of shared the news with the crew out in the vineyard as well. So,
Randy, when he approached you, did that surprise you at all?
A little bit, yes. I started selling him grapes in 2005, and I really like Eric's style. He's does a nice style with the wines that hits my palate pretty well. And so in 2008, when he was looking to have a partnership, I decided that maybe it was time to get into the good side of the grape growing, the wine industry. And we became partners in 2008 and have went from there, and we've worked together real well out in the vineyard and in the winery together.
Eric mentioned the different AVAs, but tell us again about the vineyards that you either own or manage.
I manage vineyards here at Timbercrest Farms. We have a 86-acre ranch over in Alexander Valley where we raise our Ruth's Vineyard Cabernet Sauvignon here for Kokomo Winery. And then here in Dry Creek Valley, my father's ranch. I live in town right now. I used to live on my father's ranch there, which is, I'm a fourth generation Dry Creek Zin grower. My great grandfather came here into the valley right around 1910 and worked for his Italian Swiss colony for a while, and then bought a ranch here in Dry Creek to grow Zinfandel. And then over in the Sonoma Coast Appalachian, my wife grew up on an apple orchard and of my father-in-law, Tom Mokaida. And in 1984, I started planting some grapes over there because I leased half the ranch from him. And he said, yeah, you could go ahead and plant grapes on yours because you're a grape farmer, but I'm an apple farmer and I'll stay with apples.
That's not the case anymore, is it?
That's not the case anymore. After about 6 years of growing the grapes on my side, my father-in-law saw the economic and benefit to doing grapes over there. At that time, that was in the late 80s. We started converting the whole ranch over to vineyard, and by 1998, we had 22 acres of Pinot Noir and 14 acres of Chardonnay.
And that's where this winning Pinot came from, the Gopher Hill over there.
Yes, the Pinot Noir that we got the 100-point wine for was a Gopher Hill Pinot Noir here, and that one was grown on the southwestern exposure of the ranch that's facing kind of like towards Cotati area that way, and we get the morning sun coming up over the hill with the afternoon sun coming along slowly so it doesn't get overripe. And with those is the only Pinot that we bring in here to the winery, but it's I'm picking that Pinot in the early part of October, about the same time we're getting ready to pick Cabernet up here in Alexander Valley, so it has a real long hang time up there, Jeff.
At Kokomo Winery, winemaker Eric Miller does reach outside of those four vineyards that Randy Peters manages, mostly for some of the blends they offer. But I asked, what percentage of grapes do you source from Randy and his crew for Kokomo Wines? About 70%?
You know, probably 90% grown by Randy and the crew there. We do a little bit of rock pile, and then I do have this vineyard that we work with out of Mendocino County, Alvin Tolini's vineyard, Tolini Vineyard, where we do, up in Redwood Valley, we do some Carignan, and I do a little bit of Grenache from there for my blend and that, and a little Petite Syrah for the blend. But yeah, far and away, it's we used to do a little bit more outside of what Randy farms, but I don't know, every year those wines kept on showing the best. And so remember this, we only take up to 15%, about 15% of what Randy farms. So there's a lot of grapes, a lot of vineyard that he farms that we don't take. So
Eric, your wine has a consistent, easy to drink character, and it's often soft and silky and has a pleasant amount of fruit. And reading about your techniques on your website, one sees that you use gravity assisted fruit movements, slow and gentle racking, soft pressing to minimize the tannins, a balanced oak program that leads to complexity, finesse, and freshness. And when I was looking at that, it seems like your winemaking style seems to be fatherly. You are you offer a caring, soft nature for these babes in the barrels and the tanks.
Yeah, I almost think of it as motherly. No, it's I get what you're saying, but it gentle. Being a father myself, you know, it's when the kids are sick, they always want mom, you know. But no, there's a gentle touch, and really all of that is trying to be minimalistic and really trying to let the fruit and the vineyard show. So the things we do, and like as you worded that, being very gentle and trying to, you know, minimize our impact as a winemaker on these wines, just to make sure that they show that purity. And so yeah, when we do rack, it's always with nitrogen. We don't want to bruise the wine with a pump, so do it very gentle and just think about things in that way. Now at fermentation, it's a little different with the Cabernet versus the Pinot. The Cabernet is going to need a little bit more of that maceration and a little different handling, of course, than what the Pinot needs. But yes, we on all the wines, we want to make sure that we're balanced on the oak and handle them as gentle as we possibly can.
Interestingly, and conversely, if you look at the vineyard philosophies, Randy's side, the first word is aggressive. So he's out there pruning aggressively, but for the right purpose. And Randy, you mentioned to me a couple of times, you know, proper vineyard and canopy management makes a big difference.
Exactly, Jeff. What we're doing here now more is using more trellis systems than we did, so we can get integrated light penetration onto the actual berries of the grapes. And we found that cuts down on the pyrazines and the other kind of green flavors, and we get a lot more ripe flavors at a lower sugar. And so we can have the best of both worlds, where we can have a balanced wine with balanced alcohol and balanced flavors.
Speaking of balance, when I arrived for the interview, Eric and Randy were tasting through some of the different Pinot clones they have in barrel, and there's quite a bit of discussion and consideration in determining when the wine in barrel is ready. And although these are steps almost all winemakers take, I mentioned to Eric, it's quite a creative process they go through before blending the wines.
Yeah, you know, you really got to think about some of that stuff before harvest even starts and what your vision is and what you're trying to do. One of the things particularly that we'll do on everything we make, we try to, some things it's more practical than others, is multiple picks in the vineyard. And, you know, I once had someone ask me, multiple picks because you're trying to get everything just perfectly ripe and you'll go back and pick certain blocks and then pick other blocks. And I'm like, no, actually not that. We want to make sure that we have a block, that, or we want to make sure we have a version of that wine that is less ripe because it shows nice acid, it shows more red fruit, it shows more briar, it shows it has a liveliness and a crunchy acidity that's there. And at that same time, we want that perfectly ripe middle pick that's just like beautiful. And you would think, well, why wouldn't you want everything just like that? But then we want some that are bordering that just full berry ripeness, not overripe. You know, no raisin, no prune, but something that's got that voluptuous and, you know, really the mid palate is nice, and it's a sweet mid palate, although the wines are dry. But and then when we put all those together, you know, I almost think of it almost like music, and you have these different kind of notes, and from the bass player to the guitar player to the, you know, drums keeping time and things like that. But you have these different layers and different faces of that same vineyard, of those same clones, but different levels of ripeness. We do that with our Chardonnay, we do that with Zinfandel. With Pinot Noir, it's very important to us to make sure that we have those different levels of ripeness, because you never know what the vintage is going to do. If you get extreme heat, you want to make sure you have some that you've picked where it's a little bit leaner and you do have that nice bright acidity that you can be backing in to show that freshness of it. So
in a sense, you always have a plan B going on.
You know, you got to have a plan B, because if you don't have a plan B, Mother Nature's going to have one for you. She's always going to come in and tell you what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, for the most part. And for me, part of my winemaking style has been one where I want to have, and I call it a defensive posture, but I want to have a posture in which that if I'm dealt a hand by Mother Nature, I know how to work with that innately from kind of my feel as a winemaker, because I know what that heat is going to do, and maybe, you know, and some of the raisining that may cause and stuff, and waiting that out and what that would be, and or, you know, an early rain. You know, 2011 gave us that opportunity to see what 6 inches of rain can do to Cabernet. But you know, it's one of those things. Not one vintage has been like the other vintage, so we've always had, you know, those unique weather patterns, whether it be from rain or lack thereof, that's really going to show us a different face of these vineyards. And that's why they say, you know, it takes 10 years to get to know a vineyard, because you're seeing it through these different, through these different vintages and these different characteristics that Mother Nature plays out for us. So,
and that's why you brought Randy on, because he's got 4 decades of experience. So you've seen that time and time again. As you've told me before, you're not terribly surprised by much anymore, are you?
Not really. I'm always expecting the unexpected, and hopefully we can prepare for it by having everything in balance and under control before it gets there, and then work on it once it happens. We have to be pretty flowing out in the vineyard, be able to do different things at different times than we normally have. It can't be put on a Excel spreadsheet and put, we're going to do this, this, and this. It doesn't work that way out in the vineyard. We have to be very flexible in order to do whatever cultural practice needs to be done at that moment.
And speaking of that, I know you're chomping at the bit to get out of here, because you got some stuff to do today, so we'll let you go here in a minute. But Eric, getting back to your music analogy, I mean, I like, you know, you're talking about a symphony here, and everybody has to be performing right, and you got to look for those and listen for those sour notes and adjust those. And that's what you're doing when you're in it, but it's over a period of time, not just one performance.
Yeah, you know, there's something about, you know, music as when it comes together, and it's what they call music. You know, it's not sound, it's not noise, it's music. And that's when there's a harmony, and that harmony can be with oak integrating and the type of barrel you used and so on. But, you know, that harmony could be a bit of whole cluster fermentation that shows a little bit of a different kind of style or different character in there and how that's going to play in there. But you are thinking of these different kind of notes or instruments, as you would call them, and how they would all play together. You got to have a vision at the end of what you're trying to achieve. But, you know, going back to Randy's thing, you know, it almost sounds like he's reactive in the vineyard, you know. But you have to be reactive because, as he said, there's Mother Nature. But he's one of the most proactive farmers that I've ever worked with or had an opportunity to work with. And one of the things that you'll notice is that everything is always in a timely manner. The rows are meticulously farmed. The fruit always shows up beautiful and ice cold, and they hold themselves to such a high level out there, and it's something that's so refreshing to see, that it makes us want to make sure that we're keeping up with that level of expertise and that level, you know, of care that they do. And it's like, you know, when he does drop off those grapes from Peter's Vineyard or any of the ranches there, and you come in on the truck and it's 7 a.m. and they've been working all night and they're all dusty and that, they're bringing us that year's harvest, and they're bringing us, you know, something that you can tell they're very proud. You know, when we take those bins off that truck with that forklift, it's something very special. And when they come in here, we treat them like that and try to make sure that we, you know, respect that.
You both contribute quite a bit, but some say about, what is it, like 60% of the wine's flavor and expression happens in the vineyard. Do you agree with that?
I would say maybe 70.
What do you think, Randy?
I agree completely with that, wines that we make here in Sonoma County, a lot of them are site-driven, and 70% is probably a pretty good analogy for that. And you can see it now where we're doing so many vineyard designates. When my grandfather and father, we were selling grapes to the wineries, it all went into a tank, blended with all the other growers, and they sold it as Burgundy in the bottle. And here in the last 30 years where we started doing vineyard designates, I can see what that actual block does out of that vineyard in the bottle. And so we can see how our cultural practices either do better or maybe need work in order to get a better quality product in that bottle. And so anybody that does any vineyard designates wines as a farmer, and I'm putting our name on it, usually for first thing is I taste all the wines that have our name on it before I would let anybody, you know, make them with the Peter's Vineyard on it. And then also I think that it has to be very rewarding for any grower to have his name on the bottle and seeing the accomplishment that you've done for that season in your vineyard.
Good stuff from Randy. You know, since both of them agree that about 70% of the flavor and expression happens in the vineyard, I jokingly said, well, I hope Randy's getting more of the profits. And Eric followed up with this.
You know, I could have the wine be 70% of the flavor winemaker. That would be a shame. That's not what we're trying to achieve. What we're trying to achieve, what I consider holy, what I consider, you know, the most important thing of my job is the piece of land that I'm trying to express. That's what I hold sacred. That's what's different about what we're making. Sonoma County Pinot, Sonoma County Pinot, and Russian River Pinot is Russian River Pinot. But when you're getting down to that block specific, when you're getting down to that vineyard designate, it would be a shame if it wasn't 70% of the vineyard that we're showing, because if it was the winemaker, and I could very easily make the winemaker's flavor be turn that tide and be 70%, why would we want to do that? That's something that's not from nature, not the star of the show. The star of the show is not the barrel. It's not the winemaker. It's something that you got to check your ego on, because we know what it is, and it's that vineyard, and that's what we hold sacred.
And it's that passion about their product that drives any winemaker and grower, especially those from award-winning wineries. At this point, I brought the conversation back to the North Coast Wine Challenge. Prior to the interview, I reached out to winemaker Daryl Groom, who is the chief wine judge for the competition. I thought Eric and Randy, and you, listening, would find this interesting. There are variations on how wine competitions are judged. With the North Coast Wine Challenge, there were 28 judges. Pinot Noir had the largest amount of entries, about 200. Of those Pinots, three came in with 98 scores. Kokomo was one of them. As they judged through those three, Kokomo was considered a standout, which had them win the Pinot Noir category. Then there was the Best Red category. Of all the reds entered from the six counties, Kokomo's Gopher Hill Pinot Noir from Peter's Vineyard was chosen the best. There's judging for the Best White, Best Rosé, Sparkling, and Dessert categories as well. And then there's the Best of the Best. 78% of the judges voted Kokomo's Pinot the best, and so much so, they awarded it the perfect 100-point score. Daryl Groom also said that in the 6 years of judging the competition, that Pinot Noir, quote, was as perfect as it can get, end quote. Eric's response to those stats?
So I didn't mess it up. That was great. You know, and then Randy, you know, you've got this thing that Randy does, you know, as the farmer there. And yes, he picked the site and he picked the vine space and he picked the clones and he picked the rootstock and he picks when to spray and he picked the trellising and he picked a lot of this stuff. But then there's just that vintage that, you know, as he said, you're sometime on the defensive as a grower and when you need to spray or what you need to do with some of the stuff coming at you. 2016 was an early vintage for us, meaning that we harvested that Pinot like mid-September, which was very early. We're typically harvesting that Pinot in October. But we have to give some credit, I guess, to the vintage. I guess, did the weather show up good for us that year? Or
yeah, and 2016 was a nice weather year. Not too hot, not too cold, just about right. And it did start early. We had early bud break on 2016, and that's why we harvested it probably a week or so earlier than normal, but we still had the same amount of hang time. And at a nice temperate climate that we had over there at Sonoma Coast there in Sebastopol at Peter's Vineyard.
And even though there are six different counties that are included, and temperature certainly varies between the six, the weather was pretty much the same for a lot of the entries, so it says a lot for your vineyard and cellar management.
You know, there's always the part, too, when I talk about Peter's Vineyard, I never leave it out. When did Randy plant those vines? And it wasn't very common, and it wasn't common at all. As a matter of fact, there were no vineyards in that vicinity where he planted Peter's Vineyard in the early 80s. And he was the first to plant in that Sebastopol Hills area. And now you go around there, and there's vineyards all around, you know, his vineyard there. But that age of vine, as they've let us know in Burgundy and some, you know, in the old world there, how important that is. You know, you cannot be a Grand Cru Burgundy unless it's 30-plus-year-old vines. We've hit that 30-year-old maturity mark on some of these Pinot Noir vines now, and I think it's a big characteristic in not only flavor that we get, but, you know, just that nice maturity, and they've been in there and they've lived there for that long. And I know Randy probably doesn't have to drop quite as much fruit maybe because those vines are maturing like that, but it's just, I don't want to underestimate that part of the vineyard as well, which is the age of the vines.
Yep, that's why there's so much respect for older vines. They can impart such rich characteristics. If you make your way through Sonoma County, do yourself a favor and visit the laid-back family environment of Kokomo Winery in the Timbercrest Farms group on Dry Creek Road. Now, you could spend a whole day wine tasting in that one location, along with Peterson Winery, Amphora, Papa Pietro Perry, and the Family Wines Collective. A lot of good wine is made and served in that one location. For more on Kokomo, and to see Eric and Randy, visit KokomoWines.com. If you're listening to this on iTunes, Stitcher, or another podcast provider, you can find more interviews and interesting content on my website, onthewineroad.com. I'm on Facebook as On the Wine Road, and Instagram and Twitter at JD Wine Road. If you'd like to join my wine community, look for me on Patreon. There I provide compelling tidbits you won't find elsewhere, and I give you tempting incentives as a patron. That's patreon.com/onthewineroad. Patreon is Patreon. Thank you for your continued support and keeping me company on the wine road.